Good morning, friends, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. This is episode 126. Today is June 5th, 2026. It's a cool and sunny morning here in Nashville. Local Nashvillians are doing everything possible to avoid going downtown because of the crowds associated with the CMA Festival. This morning, walking around the garden, we have abundant flowers from a variety of native plants, but not a single solitary pollinator observed. No bees or any other insects. That is a little distressing. On today's episode, my guest is my old friend Dare Bible. For many years, Dare was involved with the Program Services section of the Tennessee State Parks. She was a true leader and innovator. In the days before the internet and social media, Dare, along with Charlie Tate and others, built a tradition of recreation programming in the state parks. There was a time in the parks when delivering recreation programs was the task that came last on the list of things to do. Today, these programs are a true feature of our park system. This is in large part due to Dare and her boundless energy. Dare was deeply involved with the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association, and particularly the former resource management section of that organization. She developed many popular training programs for staff of state and federal park and our federal park friends. And so I hope you will enjoy this interview with Dare Bible, and we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish six beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Dare Bible, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you.
Dare, it's great to see you. It's been several years since we had lunch down there in downtown Nashville one day. I guess probably back in 2015 or something like that. But I follow you on Facebook, so I keep up with your retirement antics out there in Colorado, and that's where you are today?
Yes, it is.
Tell us where you are exactly.
I'm in Woodland Park, which is about 20 miles west of Colorado Springs.
Right.
And there's maybe about 8,000 year-round residents here in the town. And a lot of people think Colorado is just this big blue state, you know, peace, love, and harmony, all that stuff, and legalized pot. But it's a lot more than that. And up here where I live, it's the Christian nationalist headquarters. So, you know, I didn't move here knowing that. But anyway, Colorado's...
Well, Dare, you and I go back a long way. And I hope today to talk about your career in state parks and in parks and recreation in Tennessee. And you know, let people hear about it. You know, for the folks that were in parks and recreation and knew what was going on, they certainly were well aware of you and what you were up to. But I have tried over the 8 years that we've been doing this podcast to get some of the people involved to sit down and talk about their experience, just so that there's kind of a record of what happened, and to share that with people. It's because it's interesting and it's important for people to know the history of what has happened. Dare, one of the questions I always ask of my guests is to tell us about your growing up and maybe what inspired you to be involved in parks and recreation. I know that you're a Jersey girl. Is that about right?
That's right. And part of the last of the free range kids who, you know, tore up the neighborhood on our bikes and walking around and learned conflict management and things like that on the playground or in the neighborhood playing sports. So being outdoors was very important to me. And when I got to college in North Carolina, my freshman year, and found out there was such a field as parks and recreation, I didn't understand why everybody wasn't majoring in it, because what, play, you know, and get paid for it, be outdoors, this is great. Because I always liked physical activity, but not necessarily a school environment. And so this was perfect because there were so many different avenues for Parks and Rec. And at East Carolina, I had an instructor named Ralph Steele, who was very much into the Outward Bound type education. So we had a lot of that, and I got exposed to it and really fell in love with that.
You, my recollection is that you also went to Keene College.
I did. After about 3.5 years, I kept jacking up the out-of-state tuition in North Carolina, so I had to go back home and finish at Keene.
Okay, I understand. Okay.
And so, and the neat thing there was we had two main professors. One was City Rec, Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCA. The other one was Ben Cummings, and he was Mr. Outdoors and Appalachian Trail and different camps up in northern New Jersey. And so I really got to learn a lot from both college experiences. And then when I moved to Tennessee, I got a master's at MTSU and had Molly Whaley and Mary Bell Giannini.
Right.
And Bertha Kritchberg. So
right, right.
I had some really strong ladies, you know, in Tennessee as mentors.
Excellent. Excellent. So I first met you, Dare, in connection with you getting a job at Trousdale County, Tennessee. And back in the day, PVA was trying to build a nuclear plant there at Hartsville, Tennessee. And as part of their imprint on that community, they wanted to establish a Parks and Recreation Department. And if my understanding was that they, you know, made the money available to the local government there to hire a Parks and Recreation Director. And I was on a little bit of a committee, I think, which interviewed some of the applicants for that job, and you were among them. Is my recollection correct, or did you?
No, that's perfect.
Okay.
And yes, and I had just graduated from MTSU with a master's. Back when I was in college, I always had to work waitressing jobs to make money, and the few Parks and Rec jobs you were great, but you just didn't make a lot of money. So
right.
When I didn't have experience, I had to get a master's, you know, so that
I understand. Yeah,
that helped. But yes, it was great because I was straight out of college and excited and very naive. And but the great thing about that was I got to meet so many different people. There was a piece of land called Taylor Landing that was Corps of Engineer land. TVA gave us a lot of mitigation money. The city and county only had to put up a quarter of each of the money because of TVA's input. So,
right.
And then we had you and Roy Jensen, I think, both were technical assistants with TDEC. And Mary Wary with Metro Park, she was like a big sister helping me any way I needed it. And so I was very fortunate and meeting my mentor, Charlie Tate. At one point during that time in Hartsville, there was a lady by the name of Ruth Carman, and she was
remember
really,
Ruth? Right, right.
Really big on writing grants up and she had the ear of the county. They called them county judges back then, you know, kind of like county executive. And she wrote up a lot of grants for water access in the whole county. But anyway, she was writing up one grant and needed to have me spend part time as a senior citizen director. And so then I started taking the seniors on trips like to Cumberland Mountain, to the playhouse, and go to the park and eat, and Fall Creek Falls, that kind of thing. So I met Charlie Tate and found out about the whole programming at state parks and just what a wonderful person he was, and how I would love to work for him someday.
Well, you know, Charlie was a guest on this program a year or so ago, and we had a long talk about his long experience there at State Park. So for listeners that hear the name Charlie Tate, want to go back and hear a little bit more about Charlie, there's an interview of his. It's been a couple years ago that we did that interview, and very popular among our parks friends, because everybody loved Charlie. So you had the experience of starting that local department there in Trousdale, Hartsville, which is a tiny little community. I mean, what 8,000-10,000 people live in that whole county?
Yeah, there weren't very many, and it was the smallest county land-wise, because it was a little bit of Smith and a little bit of what's Gallatin?
It had Sumner. It had been formed by snipping off little pieces of the surrounding counties for some reason years ago.
Right.
And Hartsville, Trousdale County's been a perennial high school football you know, powerhouse for some reason or another. I don't know why. But
well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up, Mark, because that was one of my big potential roadblocks when I went there. Is it was all about football, and Coach Satterfield, the older gentleman who had an undefeated record, was king in the city.
Of course, yeah.
And that field was, you know, something untouchable. And then the Little League kind of had their hands on their little property. But the good thing was I had two of the younger leaders who had grown up in that community and didn't have Parks and Rec, and they had been off to college and knew what an advantage it would be for a community. Dale Reese, whose family owned the grocery store there in town, and Eddie Taylor, who was a lawyer and partner with the mayor.
Right.
And then there was a guy who ended up being the attorney general, district attorney general, Tommy Thompson, who also had been a football player and was beloved in the town and was just the nicest man. And so he became an ally for me as far as making inway into the fields, and Coach Satterfield, and, you know, learning that, you know, in certain situations, it really mattered who you knew, and letting those people speak for you instead of just an outsider going in and, you know, talking.
How many years were you there in Trousdale County?
2 years.
Okay. All right. And you got to know the folks in state parks and decided that would be a great move for you.
Yes, I always wanted to be a regional recreator. But at the time, Deb Pascal had that job, and then she left, and they put a freeze on it. And Charlie Tate had kind of gotten burnt out on some of the politics. And so he decided to leave, and he talked me into applying for his job. And I said, I don't want to be an administrator. I don't want to be in central office. He said, look, just get in however you can. And then, you know, then you'll be able to change in a couple years or whatever. Yeah. And I said, okay. So I did, and I got it. And in a way, since I didn't work as a seasonal or anything else, a ranger, if I was going to be in at that particular time, which was 1981, I coming in from the top and working my way down had its certain advantages. And I was able to hang in there for about 2 or 3 years. And Charlie and I have very similar styles. And he's a lot more diplomatic than I am. I managed a lot in a very similar way to him. So it wasn't like somebody coming in and just totally changing everything. And after about 2.5, 3 years, he got tired of selling Frito-Lays and stuff like that. And the position, we were able to get some positions, or one became vacant. And so I was able to, he applied for the job and got his old job back. And then I got the regional recreator job for Middle Tennessee.
Right. Now, this was at the time when Don Sharpio was director of state parks.
Yes.
And yes. Just so people understand the lay of the land, you as the
program services administrator is what they
have, leader of program services. Uh-huh. You had underneath you the a program services person in East, Middle, and West Tennessee.
We had originally there had been 6 positions, but there was only 4 at the time. There were 2 frozen, the Middle Tennessee ones, and those positions they had taken and put one at Henry Horton and one at Montgomery Bell to try to have an on-site recreation person. Okay. And that
at
was
those resort park, at those resort parks.
Correct.
Right.
And then those people were, they answered directly to the park superintendent. But we, you know, gave them technical assistance and helped them, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that was John Smith, and Janice Womble was the one that was at Horton.
Yeah, I remember John Smith very well. John worked for me in Sevierville for a summer. You remember that business, but
yes. And that was a whole nother thing as far as with the job being a supervisor. And I had 2 extremes. I had Bobby Fulcher, who never stopped working. He was like a workaholic, and he had so many great ideas, and it was all I could do to just keep up with him. And then John Smith was more like a college frat boy. And so I just had to try to.
So you had not only the regional recreation people, but also the regional interpretive specialists under your umbrella there. Okay.
Yes. And I had Faye with the library, and Faye Muir, and Nora was our secretary, Nora right. Binkley.
Right.
And so after a few years, once Charlie got back, then Janice ended up leaving and going and teaching school somewhere, but her position came into program services, and I was able to get that. And then John Smith's position came in. So we had another one for Middle Tennessee.
Okay. So Dara, what I remember about your emphasis in program services, you actually got out there and did some programming that hadn't been done before, particularly in the wellness and also wellness programming, but also into programs that were designed for women.
Yeah, back then, you know, we kind of had to go with what was what the administration would support, let me just put it that way, and mm-hmm. what they envisioned for us as far as our responsibility. And the one thing that we did all agree on was taking care of the seasonals and training them and all of that, having seasonal parks, recreators, and naturalists. Also, when I first started, there was kind of a real distinction between the recreators were looked at more as wild, paint your rock, You know, just kind of have fun while you're at the park, while the naturalists were the serious, you know, we're going to teach you about nature and all of. And so we tried to, especially Bobby and I, tried to blend it more and show with the recreation we could have a canoe trip and the recreators could be teaching the canoeing skills and rescue skills, and the naturalists could be talking about the natural environment and the flora and fauna on the way. So that was part of what we were trying to change, was some of the preconceptions or the past history, or and show more of a cohesive outdoor programming effort. And my thing at the time, they wanted us to have programs that would use the parks in the off season, which was anything other than the summer. And I had been to, I don't know, NRPA or something, and this lady was doing the fun and fitness camps, which was kind of like a poor lady's fitness fat farm type thing,
retreat sort of a situation.
Yes. And so I hired
tell us more
her.
About that, tell us what that program would look like.
So it was very interesting on a lot of different levels. We got them, and we use mainly the resort parks. I think we use Cumberland Mountain too. So we, you know, but we needed to have a restaurant, and we did East, Middle, and West. But I just came up with different speakers. This will blow your mind. Marsha Blackburn was one of them. Not that she had anything to do with fitness. This was like back in the early 80s before she got into politics, but she was a big wardrobe person at the time. And she would go in and tell people what they need to have, all this. So she came a couple times, but we had this really great psychologist that came in and talked about stress management. I partnered up with Department of Health and their wellness people, and we had nutritionists come in, and I used the rangers to do rappelling, not that that had much to do with fitness, but to show these ladies, which many of them were very rural, that, you know, it was never too late to do anything, start something new. Many of these ladies were from traditional families where, you know, they were lucky to get away, that this was an approved kind of trip that their husbands would let them go on. Back during that time, a lot of women were kind of catty, or, you know, look at her, gossiping. But in this environment, everybody was very supportive, and we did, you know, weighed them and measured them in the beginning and the end. The funny part for me, I'd had a couple nutritionists make up some of the menus. And at the time, you couldn't even get yogurt at like a Kroger's. You had to go. We had the Sunshine Hippie grocery store down there. Belmont. And so I'd have to pick up stuff from there. And the ladies at Fall Creek, I'll never forget them. They were making pea soup or bean soup. And they were just like, oh, you cannot be, you know, expecting us to serve this to the people. And I'm like, yeah, I am. And so it was an education for the parks people to see that you could do healthier menus without it, you know, just being horrible. And it also helped the people want to come back to the parks after the program and bring their families. The rangers enjoy doing the programs because all the women were like, ooh, park rangers. Right. One year I did a hayride with them, and we went, this was where at Fall Creek, and we went from the inn down to the bridge, and oh my gosh, it broke, and now y'all are gonna have to walk back. And made them little goodie bags with celery and carrot sticks, that kind of thing. And we would go for walks in the morning and then walks in the evening. And so it was an affordable program that the people could come to, we had our own little set of groupies that would come every year, you know, with their buddies, and the park staff as well as our staff just loved it.
So Dare, you know, that was truly an innovative program back in the day. You know, I can remember that it was like pulling teeth to get some of the park rangers interested in doing programming at all. They thought their job was law enforcement and maintenance of the parks. And, you know, the programming was just one more thing, you know, to add to their quiver of things that they needed to do. But that program was a truly inspirational program, and it changed the way people thought about programming in the parks.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and you're right on, Mark, as far as kind of the philosophy with some of the rangers. One thing that I loved about the rangers, and somebody by the name of Bill Boswell, he was so great about training with the rangers. And when I first started, they had mountain rescue, water rescue, every kind of rescue you could think of. And I begged Bill to let me come to one of the programs. And, you know, he wasn't real big, or it was the men, you know, it was very much women were starting to break into the field, but not at a level like there is today.
Bill was the chief ranger back in those days.
Yes,
and he had been the director of parks years ago, back during the Clement administration.
Yes,
and was brought back in to be the chief ranger, and took that job very, very responsibly, and it was responsible for getting the rangers through the police academy for the first time, which was a big deal. But
yes, he really was great. And the neat thing was, I thought, okay. And when I was first hired with Parks, I had just come off of a 5-week WEA, Wilderness Education Association, training with Paul Petzl.
Right.
And so that was kind of the next step after National Outdoor Leadership School and Outward Bound and all that, was wilderness education and trying to train the masses. And, you know, not only as a fun way to go into the wilderness, but in a safe way, but also safety and for resource management and for rescue, trying to keep the numbers down, all of that. I saw that here all these rangers had this technical knowledge, but they didn't really know how to talk and debrief. But I thought, what an opportunity when they're, you know, doing rappelling or climbing programs, that they could do so much more. And so I was able, we wanted to do that training. I was able to get Ray Kuchar and Eddie Schellenberger to kind of be my instructors, I guess you would call it. And then I got a couple guys from Colorado that I knew to come in and help teach two of the courses. And
so these were courses open to the public, which gave participants an opportunity to learn about rappelling and climbing and that sort of thing.
Yes, and a lot of the parks, we did that kind of stuff, but then we did a 10-day program, and then we did a 3-week program where we trained certain rangers in this, and we got them certified nationally.
Right.
And then the idea was for them to go and train their rangers and more people and open it to the public. And so it's not one of the main things, but people like Monica up at Rome Mountain, she has done some women's programs with, you know, the outdoor stuff. Laura Franklin, she was like my protege, and you know, one of those proteges that outpace you as far as the outdoor stuff, and she's really done a lot. Mike Carlton was on our first trip, and then when he became park manager, I mean director of
Director,
state parks,
yeah.
he
Right.
was all about it. And
Right.
so, you know, we really
Do you keep up with what's going on in the Tennessee parks by way of programming these days?
I do some whenever I come into town. Laura and Mike and Ann Marshall and I always try to get together for
Right.
you
There
know,
has
meet.
been really a revolution in programming in Tennessee state parks over the last few years. It's truly amazing. The
It
creativity
is.
and the dynamism that they put into the programming out there.
Yes, and seeing this Department of Outdoor Recreation, it's just, you know, I when I first heard about it, I was kind of like, oh man, you know, why didn't they have that going on when I was there? But then I thought, you know what, some of us just were ahead of our time or whatever, and I'm just so grateful they have it now. And I'm grateful that the lady Justine that was at the birding park,
Right.
Knoxville,
Said Seven Islands, right.
Seven Islands, yes. And the other thing that I'd like to share is once I left parks, which was a whole nother story, but the end of my career was with the State Department of Health.
Tell us about
And
that.
we had a ton of grant money from the feds. And I was hired under this obesity grant. And so I got to learn all about health and components of population health, like food deserts, like parks and trails and safe routes to school and all that kind of stuff. And I lucked out in health, having a boss that was very similar in her style to Charlie Tate, and kind of let me go and, you know, was there to support me. And,
Right.
you know, we'd both get blessed out for rolling our eyes in some of the staff meetings. So, you know, that was kind of a carryover from parks. Me and Charlie both were eye rollers with some of the upper administration, which wasn't always necessarily the wisest decision. But anyway, it was really kind of cool that health had all this money and they wanted to partner with parks. And I knew all the players in parks.
Right.
And the commissioner of health at the time was a runner. And
Was it
he
Jim
loved.
Word? Is that who were, was it?
No, his name started with a D. Dr. D, we called him Drysden or something like that. He was
Don't
a
know.
really tall guy, like maybe 6'4", 6'6",
Okay.
something like
Yeah.
that. But he was a runner. And so we were able to give the parks some money to have little running clubs and fields. So at Cedars, they have a trail that goes off from, you know, where the nature center is and all that, where they do runs.
Okay.
And the little elementary school south side, they were able to plant gardens with some of the money. And Bonnie Gamble, she is one of the leaders and the wonder girls of Parks and Recreation in Tennessee, and she got quite a few of our grants. And she
Now,
had school.
was Bonnie at McMinnville or Manchester?
Manchester.
Manchester, right.
Yes. And oh my gosh, she was so wonderful to work with. And the school gardens and more trails and all kinds of things. So it was great to be able to work for an agency that had money and could give it to the smaller communities. We have this one little community up around Jolton, Springfield area. And the mayor was very progressive, and he had these two young ladies that worked for him in the office, and they wrote up the grant, and they wanted a trail at their park. And, you know, I mean, it was just that small, but they knew their stuff. You know how some of these ladies are in the office. And so we were able to service their community, you know, all the way up to somebody like Bonnie, who, you know, she knew exactly what she was doing.
Well, let me interject another topic here. And you know, one of the challenges in the State Parks Division back in the days when you and I were involved was to positively increase the professionalism of the people in the agency, and to get themselves to think of themselves as people in the parks and recreation field, rather than thinking of themselves as police officers or some other alternative thing like that. And so getting those folks involved in the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association was always sort of an interest of mine and yours. And there was created a thing called the Resource Management Section within the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. And I know you were heavily involved with that organization. Can you tell us about your involvement there?
Yeah. And I'd completely forgotten about that, Mark, but Donna Reed.
Oh, I forgot about Donna. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
She was one of my best friends, and she's the one that got me hooked on Colorado, because she, after TVA, she moved out here, and I used to come out every year and visit her. But anyway, she worked for TVA doing programs and had seasonals and stuff like that at their different lakes. And so we started working together with our in-service training. She came to mine, I went to hers, and then we did some other kind of programs together. And we decided that we wanted to have this program called Meeting of the Minds. And so we
and
invited.
It became an annual thing. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So we invited the national parks. We didn't always have their involvement, but sometimes we did. And the Corps of Engineers was very big in it. Then we would have state parks people could come, because we would do it at a park, and then we could, you know, some retransfer the rooms back, you know, instead of having to pay cash. In fact, that was even something with the TRPA conferences when they were in Knoxville. We could stay at Norris and, you know, be able to go to the conference. So we always had to do things like that. And even with WEA, we had them come and we hosted two national conferences so our park rangers could come and go to it, because they couldn't travel. So, you know, that was a great partnership, and they got to have national speakers and stay either in the inn or camp or, you know, one of the group lodges. But anyway, back to Donna and Meeting of the Minds. It was great because we had parks people. We would have different resource management topics going on. We had it most of the time at Fall Creek. And so we would have, you know, we hated the fact that here we were all outdoor people, but we were sitting in meetings all day long. And so we would always have an outdoor component. Like one year we did Leave No Trace training, and another year we did something on the water. And so we would try to have some kind of active outdoor training, but just the sharing that went on, because all of us had our own mandates with our own individual agencies, but a lot of overlap.
You know, I'm sorry to say that the resource management section within TRPA has been dissolved. It doesn't really exist anymore. And to me, that's a shame, because I thought that was one of the most energetic parts of the TRPA organization back in the day.
Yeah, well, I think so much of it has to do with the people and with the organizations and where their priorities are. And, you know, back then, Mark, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. I can remember me and Bobby, mainly Bobby, begging them to let us have laptops, you know, because we were out in the field, but they just right. wouldn't do it. And right. then we'd have to go back and forth depending on what group came in. Some of them loved it that we had home offices. Others freaked out and thought, oh no, you gotta, you know, come into central office or, you know, go to a park or do some, you know, you're going to be goofing off if you're not somewhere where somebody can, you know,
right.
And then comes COVID and everybody gets to work from home, you know.
It's remarkable today how things work. You mentioned Justine Cucciera, who heads up the new Bureau of Outdoor Recreation. I would have thought that she would have been required to be in central office here in Nashville, but I'm told she keeps her office up in the Knoxville area. So,
yeah, and you know, when I brought her name up before, I was gonna, her husband is named Ben. And when I was at the health department, he was one of the people I leaned on. He is one of the most creative out there, but really with it kind of guys. And the two of them, you talk about a power couple as far as Parks and Rec. And he always would have this conference or get together or whatever you want to call it, called the no conference thing. And I mean, he was just out there. But as far as closing streets down to have street festivals, as far as one year they made things for bus stops, I mean, he just, as far as the urban walkways and access and bicycling and getting one of the grants we had, he was working with some of these local stores to have healthier foods in them
in the Knoxville area.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was just great to see the two of them connect and get together because they're both so talented, you know?
Right. I've only met Justine on one occasion. Beth and I were in East Tennessee for Thanksgiving or whatever. You know, they have that day, the day after hike thing.
Right.
In the morning after, and we did the hike at Seven Islands, and she led the hike, and so I got to meet her on one occasion, but don't know her well, but she's really well thought of.
Yeah, she's very forward thinking. Another northern transplant. I think she's from New York instead of New Jersey. You know about that, PA, Ohio.
Well, you know, I have to laugh. I remember when you and I first met. You heard that my family was from Wilkes-Barre, and you had to bring up, had I ever been to the Tubbs? And I said, yes, I have been to the Tubbs. And I was surprised that anyone in Tennessee would even know what that was.
Yeah, my brother went to college there. So, you know,
you go to Wilkes? Did he went to Wilkes or to King's or?
Wilkes.
Wilkes. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Okay. Well, the Tubbs is a series of springs that along this one little creek there up in the mountain in the Poconos. And it's just a beautiful little place. It's a Pennsylvania state natural area now.
Wow.
Yeah. I was up there a couple of years ago for a funeral. I guess my aunt's funeral. And drove past that little area. So yeah, it's a beautiful area. So I wanted to hit one other thing. I know that you were involved with the Wilderness Education Association over the years. You first met Paul Petzold, who, for listeners that may not be familiar with the name, Paul was a world-class mountain climbing, mountaineer type guy. One of the first people to climb K2, I think, in Nepal. Nepal, is that where that is?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you know, being out here in Colorado, he also was one of the men that taught the at Camp Hale. I think it was the 10th Mountain Division
Oh
that,
my.
yeah, that went over and were in the Alps during World War II, and they learned how to get around in snow and ski and climb and this and that. Over it's west of Leadville, and it's really a cool place. But also a lot of the ski moguls that started the ski slopes once they came back from the war, the Vail, Aspen, all that was started by these guys that trained at Camp Hale.
Isn't that interesting? Paul, I first met Paul. He attended the TRPA meeting in Gatlinburg back in 80 or 81. I don't remember what year it was that we had that Gatlinburg hosted the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. I'm sure he was there to make a talk. What a terrific, terrific guy. And he was one of the founders of the National Outdoor Leadership School. Which
Yes.
was a big thing at the time. And then later formed the Wilderness Education Association. And were you on the board of the WEA?
Yeah, I was on the board. I was one of their certified instructors. At one point in time, we moved their office to Radnor Lake when Mike Carlton was the manager there. And,
I was not aware of that. That's interesting. Okay.
yeah, I think that lasted about 2 years, and it was kind of like this time, you know, you have moments in time, Mark, and this was one of them. We had some of the best seasonals ever at Radnor Lake. We had all kinds of programming going on. Mike and Laura, Laura was there at the time. They had partnered with Charles Davis Foundation, and they had a bunch of inner city kids that they brought out here to Colorado. Mike
Oh,
went to
no kidding.
Mike
Wow.
went to college at Fort Collins, so he was very familiar with that area. And then with all our WEA training and our contacts, and then Charles Davis Foundation, they were able to fly these kids out here. And I want to say maybe Ray Kuchar was with them too. I'm not for sure, but I think maybe. And they did snow work and glissading and all that. It was like in May. Some of these kids, I mean, they were straight from the projects.
Right.
And this was like experience that was a once in a lifetime kind of thing for some of them. And it was very worthwhile and rewarding for all of us, but we had the greatest staff. We were doing outrageous programs. We were kind of under the radar. John Netherton was still alive and well and, you know, raising hell in the administration and, you know, helping to raise money for the Friends of Radnor and get property and, you know, keep the encroachment from coming. And so it was just a couple years of bliss with everything just working right, you know. But yeah.
Interesting. So, do you get back to Nashville frequently?
Yeah, I've got four grandkids and two daughters there, so I come at least a couple times a year.
Right.
And like I said, do see Mike and Ann and Laura. And, you know, occasionally Charlie, I did make it to one of the reunions that they have in July, the state park ones. And that was
Right.
great to see a
Right.
lot of the old timers, which I guess that's us now. We're old, Mark.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Dare, it's been a joy to speak with you and to talk about all these times and places and parks and your experience in parks. I hope the next time you get into town, you'll give me a ring and we can have some lunch.
I will definitely do that. And I appreciate the opportunity. I know we've talked about this for a while, and I
Well,
wasn't
yeah,
sure if I could remember how to do Zoom, but I was glad you said it because I thought, yeah, better that we do it sooner than later.
well, exactly. It's probably we had you and I communicate on Facebook and chat back and forth on social media from time to time, and I saw that you at one point had some pictures of your grandchildren and you were in Nashville. I said, "Dare, you should call me when you come into town." And in any case, at that time we decided we needed to get together and do an interview, and it just and just recently have been able to get it scheduled. So thank you for being available to do that, and you're a joy to talk with, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You made it very easy for a tech unsavvy person.